the heart is in a holy place. When the heart is in a holy place. We know Sandburg as poet of the people, biographer of Lincoln. He spent 20 years, Sandburg did, writing the 6-volume biography of Lincoln. We know Sandburg as an author of children's literature. We know Sandburg as novelist, media figure, collector of folk songs. But then there's that wonderful little secret. Sandburg loved the Spanish classical guitar, and he couldn't play. He played the folk guitar. He knew some 9-10 chords, including a chord that nobody else could figure out. And speaking of which, that lovely couple that just mentioned going to the rock concert in Charlotte, I know for a fact who played in Greensboro last night. Speaking of folk music, who played in Greensboro? Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Yeah. Were you there? Okay. No, you don't look like you were there last night. Or rather the night before. Okay. Well, what I'd like to do is present my case for Sandburg's holy place of the guitar through some of Sandburg's writings. That wonderful woman who just mentioned her grandmother's involvement with the Lanier Library in Tryon, which continues to be a gem. If you haven't been to the Lanier Library in Tryon, it's one of our national treasures, truly. One of the oldest, if not the oldest, one of the oldest private libraries in the United States. So, Sandburg played the guitar and sang as part of his poetry readings. He did this for years. He loved to do it. He even encouraged people to leave when he got to the part where he was going to sing and play the guitar. He told people, you know, if you leave now, I'm fine. I'll have those lights go down low, and I'll be here with my guitar singing. And this is exactly by myself, and this is exactly what I'd be doing if I were home now. So feel free to leave. And of course, nobody ever left. Okay. But there was a big problem. Sandburg was reviewed again and again, not as having played the guitar in those moments after his readings, but rather the banjo. And this irritated him. So he wrote Century Magazine. It was like an early life magazine. And in this letter, we get a great vision of what kind of guitar Sandburg loved. Okay. To the editors.
Would you kindly correct the statement, published a number of times, that in the song offering of my recital concerts, I employ a banjo? The instrument used is one with less percussion and more intimations of silence. Sometimes when the strings of it are thrummed, one has to listen twice.
I'll use the mic now. We can record. Here's what's fascinating. We go back to that first collection of Sandburg poems that brought him national attention. This was about 19, anybody? 16, somebody nailed it over there, 1916. And of course, this is the collection that we all know and read and have by our bedside called... the Chicago poems. Now, here's what we don't typically appreciate is this particular typical Chicago poem called Fellow Citizens. Now, in it, in the first part of the poem, I'm cutting a little bit out, Sandburg talks about a couple of very wealthy Chicago bigwigs. And Sandburg knew them because Sandburg was an active journalist and a fiery speaker. He was a member of the Radical Socialist Party of Chicago with incredibly radical ideas, dangerous ideas, such as the vote for women. Okay. And then another was the 50-hour work week. Watch out. In any case, Sandburg, I've lost my train of thought. Sandburg went on to write this wonderful story because the Chicago poems are more like these small stories with lots of deep feeling. But this is about a very special man down in one of the worker neighborhoods, some of the first major worker developments in the United States. This poem is called Fellow Citizens, and let's just watch to see who this special man is.
My fellow citizens, down in Gilpin Place, near Hull House, is a man with his jaw wrapped for a bad toothache. And he has it all over Jim Kirch, the butter millionaire, and the mayor when it comes happiness. He is a maker of guitars, and not only makes them start to finish, but plays them after he makes me 1 second to quickly change my tuning, and I will play just once through this wonderful Italian dance that I believe Sandberg heard on the streets of Chicago, maybe 1912, 1913, there about 100 years ago. This was well before Segovia, the Spanish guitar master, was on the scene. Well before that.
Have you ever forgotten your glasses? Thank you so much. Now, Sandberg did get to meet Segovia. In fact, the picture in your program is at their meeting in 1938. So Sandberg already had been writing about the guitar for a while in the Chicago poems, in the Rutabaga stories. There were some other poetic works in which the guitar is mentioned. And finally, Sandberg gets to meet the master. And did I say this was 1938 in Chicago, Segovia's first concert in Chicago. He had traveled already to New York on different occasions, but now he was in Chicago. The two men met after the recital, and Sandberg was thrilled. We can see the glee, the absolute glee in Sandberg's expression there. He was thrilled to meet Segovia. Sandberg, by the way, had been listening to Segovia recordings already in the 30s. In fact, the very first piece I played earlier is a sample of some of the music that Segovia recorded early on and that Sandberg loved to listen to. When Sandberg was up here in Flat Rock, it was part of a daily routine. Pull out the Segovia recording record player and start the day with that music. But anyway, it's been written that that meeting in 38 in Chicago after Segovia's recital inspired the next 20 years of Sandberg's writing. He was so excited to have heard that concert, to have met Segovia, and to write about it, and of course other things as well. Now, there was a small problem. Sandberg asked Segovia for guitar lessons. And the Spaniard, in that wonderful Latin spirit, said, of course I'll give you guitar lessons. 12 years later, Sandberg was still waiting. A woman who was at the reception, in fact, she was the host of that 1938 reception, ran into Segovia in Havana, Cuba, in the Palace Hotel. And Segovia was there in Havana to play with the symphony. Anyway, she sees Segovia in the lobby, and to quote Sandberg, she nailed Segovia. She had him sit down over a meal and write out something that she could take back to Sandberg, because she knew that Sandberg was still waiting for that lesson or for something. And we'll hear in just a little bit that composition, that original composition for Sandberg. But I think it's interesting to hear a humorous piece that Sandberg writes about Segovia and that Sandberg had rejected. What? This writing was sent to the Guitar Review in New York City. Sandberg sent it to the Guitar Review. The Guitar Review still publishes today. They decided no. They had published several letters of Sandberg's. They had published his wonderful definitions of the guitar. Very quickly, I'll give you those 8 definitions. A chattel with a soul, an instrument of quaint form and quiet demeanor, a box of chosen woods, a portable companion, a small friend, weighing less than a newborn infant, a device in the realm of harmonic creation, a highly evolved contrivance, a vibratory implement, under skilled cajolery, giving out with serene maroon meditations, flame dancers in scarlet sashes, snow-white acrobats plunging into black midnight pools, odd numbers in evening green, waltzing with even numbers in dawn pink. Thank you, Carl Sandberg. Those definitions, when I read those, it was before I knew of Sandberg's love of the classical guitar, but when I read those, I knew what he was talking about, because I share that same love. And also, by the way, I read that in, of all places, the introduction of a major work by a British musicologist. If a Brit quotes a Yank to start his book, you know this Yank is onto something. Okay. So I was sold. But anyway, let's get back to this rejected work. The reason it was rejected was very simple. Vladimir Bobry, the head of the editorial board, said, listen, we've only got 750 subscribers. Our readers might not realize that this is a humorous piece. They might think we don't respect Segovia. So, listen, D'Alessio, you tell your friend Sandberg there, but thanks, but no thanks. Well, here's what's fabulous about this writing. Do you remember those 2 New York City philosophers of Abbott and Costello? And the wonderful little vignette they did called Who's On First? And by the way, if you've never come across Who's On First, go to that important research tool of YouTube and just type in Who's On First? Who is on first? First base. And you'll get some wonderful versions, different versions of Abbott and Costello. So Sandberg had heard Abbott and Costello, had heard Who's On First, and now he's taking what he heard and he's writing about Segovia, of all people. Let's hear this. This is called Subway Conversation by Carl Sandburg, and it's meant to be humorous. It's meant to be an homage to Abbott and Costello. All right, we're on a subway in New York City. Two common men in the vernacular of the streets there.
Subway Conversation. Hey, there is only one Segovia. Well, sure. How can there be more than one Segovia? Well, what I mean is that there is more than one Segovia. Did you hear it? Okay, I know what you're trying to say. You mean no one has yet come along who can stand up to Segovia, trade punches, and come out with it. You talk like he's a prize fighter, a leather pusher. Well, a champion is a champion, ain't he? Yeah, sure. And an artist is an artist. Well, if an artist has what it takes, and there's one more fights than any others in the field, why can't I say he's a champion? All right. Have it your way. When I come back to what I started with. Oh, yeah? What was that? I said that there's only one Segovia. And you got smart and had to ask, how can there be more than one Segovia? Well, by cracky, I'm coming back again to ask you, how can there be two Segovias? Ah, the first time you said that, I told you. Of course, if there was more than one Segovia, we'd hear about it. Sure. Sure. And since we don't hear there's two Segovias, there is only one Segovia. And that's what I started with. You wanted an argument. Well, here's my station. I'm getting off, and my last word to you is the same as my first. There is only one Segovia.
Excuse me. I would love to go on for about 45 minutes, but I won't do that. If you would like, I'd love to come back and give you the whole story. Sandburg writes, "Solo call for Saturday night guitar.
Time shall be man invented time to be used. Love shall be, yet man never invented love. Nor is love to be used like time. The clock wears numbers 1 to 12. You look and read its face and tell the numbers precisely, exactly. Yet who reads the face of love? And who tells love numbers precisely, exactly? Holding love in a tight hold for keeps, fastening love down and saying, oh, it's here for now and here for always. You don't do this offhand, casual-like. Love costs. Love is not so easy. Nor is the shimmering of stardust, nor the smooth flow of new blossoms, nor the drag of a heavy hungering for someone. Love is a white horse you ride, and wheels and hammers leading you lonely, or a rock in the moonlight for rest, or a sea where phantom ships cross always, a tall shadow always whispering, a circle of spray, maybe a rainbow round your shoulder. Heaven, heaven is love to care. And light? Light is a rose petal, a blossom, a bubble, a remembering bar of music, or a finger, or a wisp of hair, never forgotten. In the same collection of honey and salt,
Sandburg, in another poem, has an image of a man dying, grasping guitar strings. Also, we know that Sandburg's daughter, she's written that when Sandburg was on his deathbed, that he specifically requested not piano, not violin, not concertina, but classical guitar recording of Segovius. So, when the heart is in a holy place. For Sandburg, that was a very special place. I should just, as a one note at the very end here, mention that Penelope Niven, of course, has written a fabulous oral history of Sandburg's life. It's a monumental work. She's a tremendous scholar who loved Sandburg. She deferred to Gregory D'Alessio, another anecdotal biographer who knew Sandburg's love of the classical guitar. And so Penelope doesn't really go into much about this lifelong love. But I think we can all understand that in our lives there's some current that keeps moving through there, even if we don't work with it or we don't write. We have something that seems to stay with us in that deep, loving way. And that was the case, I believe, with Carl Sandburg. Thank you very much. Thank you.